Hello and welcome to the Change and Transition podcast with me, your host, Crystal Deborah Ecole. Now, for those of you who are new to the show, I started this podcast when I was going through a huge career transition. In a nutshell, I was in an unfulfilling career as a lawyer, and then I went in search of something new, but I couldn't really name it. Eventually, I discovered that I loved to develop people, loved to develop potential in them, and I wanted to create something that would encourage people all over the world to reach their full potential. And this leads me very nicely onto today's episode. Now, lots of people talk about achieving their dream career, where they're going to do something meaningful and change the world, yet they find themselves in uninspiring work just to pay the bills. So today we speak with Dr. Sam Collins, who took the plunge, pursued her purpose, and is now changing lives all over the globe. We explore how she did it and how you too can have the purposeful career that you've been dreaming about. Now, I encourage you to listen all the way to the end because there's going to be a prize giveaway. Enjoy. Hi, Sam. Welcome to the Change and Transition podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's very exciting. I love what you're doing. It all looks really very, very purposeful. And, you know, I know so many women are going to be getting so much benefit from you. So I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, thank you very much. So I want to just jump straight into the questions, really. So could you start by telling us who you are and what you do?
Oh, if I knew that, I would be able to give you the answers. No, I'm just kidding. I think that, you know, that well, I'm Sam Collins. I'm founder of Aspire for Equality. I'm a women in leadership advocate and activist. And I have been, you know, doing this work for 20 years. And I mostly love it nearly every day. And of course, right now, with everything that's happening in the world, there's lots for us that are involved in women's equality to do. You know, there's lots for us to do. So, you know, I'm excited, terrified, all at the same time, most days right now.
So do you want to give us a quick summary then of your career to date? Because I know you didn't start in this. There's been a journey.
Well, I don't know that I've really done much else. I know that a lot of people kind of had, you know, their career in the business world or whatever world, not for profit world, and then they maybe started their own business or whatever. But it was a bit of a different case for me because I started Aspire when I was 29. So still, although I was still pretty young, although at the time I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be 30. You know, like, oh, my life is ending. I need to do something. So I started Aspire when I was 29, but before that, pretty traditional upbringing in a small town in southern England. I lived on a council estate. And then, you know, I did the usual thing, school. I always had very strong values around equality, although I didn't really realize it. I would say all the time, which is really interesting because my kids say it all the time, that's not fair, that's not fair. And had a very kind of pro-equality dad. Went to Liverpool University to do a degree in business studies because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. My dad was very disappointed I was doing business studies because he wanted me to do something like physics or something, but it's just not me. Yeah. I did try physics A-level for about half a day and then, you know, it didn't work out very well. In the final year of my degree, my mother died really suddenly. She took her own life. And she'd always really been my role model. She'd been someone who I would say, God, look at this woman. You know, she was a 1980s power dresser. She had a great job. She was a head of finance or finance director. I can't remember exactly the title of a big mortgage company. And so that was a very big deal for me and a time, I think at 21, when I realized, oh, you know, my life completely changed. And I decided that I was going to perhaps go on the traditional road that many of my other friends, and many of the students that I was studying with, was going on. So, and then I ended up starting Aspire at 29, and now I'm 49, so heading towards the big 50.
Ah, so now you've given us an overview of your upbringing, your background, and your career to date. I wonder, What happened between you leaving university and starting Aspire?
I was working in this pub near to Buckingham Palace, actually, and I was earning really minimum wage. I think it was probably less than minimum wage because they were a bit like that in there. And it was really, such hard work. I mean, I was just horrible place to be, really. Mm-hmm. But it was all I could kind of do. And I remember these American tourists would come in and they'd say, "Oh, you're at college, you know, are you studying?" And I'd be like, yeah. You know, this is not my real job kind of thing, but it actually was. And it really did impact my confidence, and it was hard. You know, it was hard to get out of that. It was hard to think about what I wanted to do. And, you know, I didn't really have a support network or anything like that. So it wasn't like one day I was like, okay, I'm going to start Aspire and it's all going to be amazing. It was a long, you know, it was a long journey. And, I'm really glad that I did it, but I wouldn't say that it was easy, you know, back then or even now in some ways. But yeah, it was tough. When I think back now, it was tough times.
Wow, what a story. What a story. But how did you start to think about what you wanted to do with the rest of your life in terms of career? What was this breaking point where you thought, okay, I need to do something more purposeful?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, anyone that works in the hospitality industry knows that it is exhausting, right? Because you don't have a huge amount of time to be thinking about, like, what's my career plan? And I don't know that you even kind of, I even thought about, all I thought about was, I need enough money to pay my rent. I lived in a really rubbish kind of bedsit, which I got broken into a couple of times. And I just thought, I just need this money really to survive. I was in survival mode. And, you know, so many people right now are in survival mode. So it wasn't, I didn't even think I deserved really to think about kind of what's my career plan. I mean, I knew I had a degree, but I sort of felt like that was such a long time ago. And I think many of us kind of wonder what we learn at school or our degrees or what was the point of that kind of thing. I couldn't really remember any of it. And so I didn't, all I felt was I don't like where I am. I don't like this. It doesn't feel like me. And I had this sort of niggling feeling that wouldn't go away, that I was better than this. Better than this, and I can do more. And I'd look at everyone around me and they would seem to be sort of happy in what they were doing. And I felt bad, like, Sam, don't be like this. Like, this is, you can't, you know, you're in an environment where people aren't really aspiring so much in their careers, and then you kind of feel bad for wanting to be the one that's doing something different. So it's very hard. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh God, I want to do something different. And then I'd be like, but I don't know what it is. I want to do something, I don't know what it is. And you know, this would go on around for a long time. And then I remember working in this restaurant, actually on the Strand in London, you know, theatre district, super busy. And I always, whenever I worked in these places, they would always very quickly promote me to like a supervisor, then assistant manager and a manager or something, because, you know, I kind of like bossing people around. And so they would always give me, I was one of their duty managers, and it was, again, it was bloody hard work. And I thought to myself, all right, I looked around and I was like, what do you like about this? And my first response was absolutely nothing. And then my second response was, I like the food because they gave me free food. And then my third response was, I like the team meetings. This was something I really enjoyed. Like, we'd have like a team huddle every day, and it was an opportunity to do a little bit of training on something, like the new menu item or how to deal with a difficult guest or something like that. And I was like, I really liked that stuff. And I was reading books on training, and I was reading books on how to motivate people and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And I was like, this is the bit I really like. And then I remembered back to my degree. Oh yeah, Sam, you liked the human resources bit, didn't you? And it all started to sort of come together a little bit. But all right, Sam, this is what you like doing. And then I found this, I was reading this journal, not really a journal, magazine or something for the hospitality industry. And there was a job in it for, I never forget, corporate trainer for cruise lines, travel in Alaska, the US, the Caribbean. And I thought, blimey, that sounds amazing. But I couldn't do that. Oh, but that sounds amazing. oh, but I couldn't do that. And I ripped it out and I put it in my pocket of my coat and I left it there. And it was not until I actually got dumped by my boyfriend and all was lost. Well, I thought, I remember pulling it out of my coat and I thought, I'm going to apply for this. And the deadline had actually passed for it. And I thought, well, no harm, no foul. I may as well just apply for this job. And I applied for it and I put so much work into the application. I remember I did a whole, back in the days of when you had to print out, oh, you know, that the overhead projector things. So, and there was no internet then even. You couldn't even like Google. You had to like go to the library. It was a thing. And I remember I put this big application together and I said, I know the deadline's passed, but I'm really interested in this role. Anyway, they contacted me the next day and I was in an interview the day after or something. And I had to do a presentation. Anyway, I got the job. But that was, you asked about a turning point. And that was a big turning point for me when I found myself in Johnson & Wales University in Miami doing an orientation for this, you know, world cruise line. And, you know, a few weeks before I was like serving up, not that there's anything wrong with waitressing because I use those skills every day with three kids, but I found myself in this, you know, environment with all these kind of, you know, newly graduated, more corporate people. So I was, you know, I went for it and I got it and I was completely shocked to be there, but that's the story. That's how it happened.
You just went for it. And I really like that. I mean, there are a number of things there. You thought about what you were good at. You actually took the time out to analyze it and really think. You saw an opportunity and then you went with it. So that's really interesting because I know a lot of people who they keep saying to me, oh, you know, I admire people that go out and do what they want. I couldn't do it. But I think it's just the fact that you took the time out to think about it and you saw something and just did it. And you got it.
You have to do it. You have to do it. Think that, you know, I mean, it wasn't instant. I didn't look at the ad and then do it. I mean, I don't remember how long it was in between, but it was a good few weeks, maybe even a few months. I don't know how long that thing sat in my coat pocket. But I, you know, I had this moment where I was like, well, what do I have to lose? The deadline's gone anyway. If they say no, they say no. Then that will prove to me that I'm right, that I shouldn't apply for it anyway. So I didn't really have anything to lose. And I also had this sort of intuitive feeling like it was the right thing to do, like a little voice in my head. Do you ever get that? Like, do it. And I, you know, no, I can't. Do it. You know? So I'm really glad I did. And it was the same thing really when I started Aspire, because I came back to the UK and found myself sort of back in this situation again of not knowing anyone, having very little money. And I said to myself, well, what would you really like to do? And I, well, I've always wanted to start my own business. And like, where did that come from? And I realized that it even come from my childhood days of, you know, bossing my sister around in the garden, around, you know, trying to teach her things. And she was never really listen, still to this date. And I said, okay, well, if you're going to do something, what would you do? And you hear all these voices, if you don't have any money, you don't, and this can be voices from inside, but it can also be voices from very well-meaning people around you. My dad, for example, very well-meaningly, he was like, you know, you need to be older, you need to have more experience, you need to have more money, you need to have a network, I remember my dad very clearly, he was like, don't do anything just for women. Are you crazy? You know, you're going to be called a feminist. Dun, dun, dun. You know, like that's a really bad thing. I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, I have always been one to not really listen to others. And I think sometimes it's my Achilles heel. But I think people who over listen to others, and whether that's family or your boss or society, or, you know, like the negative voice, if you over listen to it, it's very, very paralyzing. And it you know, it really stops us from doing that kind of purposeful work that we were born to do.
Yeah, and I completely get everything that you're saying. The naysayers, not that they want the best for you. They want you to succeed. They want you to be able to take care of yourself. But there's just something in you that says, that's where I need to be. I don't know exactly how I'm going to do it, but I need to make, this is what I'm here for. And I'm with you. I get it. So I know, again, people will be listening thinking, oh, so how did you do this? You knew that you wanted to help women. You knew that you wanted to make a difference in the world. How did you make that a reality?
Again, I mean, I've never been one to have a big plan. So I know people really advocate sort of strategic plans and business plans and all that kind of thing. I've never, ever, ever had one. I'm a little bit more, probably you might call it on the fly, but I'm a bit more like, okay, let me get started on something. Let me try something out. And then, I can review and I can change direction. I mean, that has served me really well. And it serves me really well right now because things are changing so rapidly with COVID. But I said to myself, okay, what could you do? What are you good at? You know, what have you been doing? Okay, well, you've been training people. I'd been working in hotels. I knew how to run events. I said, okay, perhaps you could do a little event. Perhaps you could do a little event for women. What could you do it on? What's every woman's issue? I came up with work-life balance, and that's not changed significantly in 20 years. I had a friend that, I had someone I knew who was nice, you know, that I got on well with, and she had recently come out of doing an MBA on some research. She'd done some research about work-life balance. And, listen, I could do an event, you could speak, maybe we could do something. And she agreed, and I thought maybe if I could do an event for about 20 people, 20 women or something like that, that would maybe give me, I was looking for affirmation that this was something that I should do. And I thought this would be a chance to get a little bit of interest in Aspire. This is the name of the company I'd come up with. And this was, you know, this was the way I wanted to go. And so hard to remember now, but I created a little website, or someone helped me create a website. I don't know. That was it. A pastry chef I knew.
Okay.
Who was also doing websites, and he still does, actually. He's an amazing, now he's a world-renowned chocolatier, actually, and also has a website company. Anyway, I was friendly with him from my hotel days, and I said, can you help me? He did. We created a little website, put this event on it, and then I was like, oh God, I wanted to charge for it because I didn't want it to be free. I wanted it to, you know, like, feel like you're coming to something, you're buying a ticket. And I was bold enough to go into a hotel. I remember I was walking around the city and there was a new hotel, and I love hotels, and I know a little bit how new hotels work. So I was bold enough, I mean, it took me a while, I was sitting outside for a while, but I was bold enough to walk in, ask to speak to the general manager, and then ask for a free room in return for me bringing in 20 high flying. Remember, I will bring in 20 high flying women from the city so they'll see your beautiful hotel. I had no idea how I was going to bring in this 20 high flying women, but I said it, you know, with as much as I could muster. And he said, yes, I could have the room, but I would still have to pay for drinks and food. Right. So it's no harm, no foul on them. Right. They've got these rooms. I was going to bring in these 20 high flyers, so it was all good for him, and I would pay for the drinks, so everybody won. And so I charged £45 for it, which I thought was quite a lot for an evening event. But I thought, oh God, I actually need to cover these costs. So then I didn't know anybody really. I knew about four people because I'd been out of the country for so long, and I hadn't really been very good at kind of keeping up. I'm still not very good at that, like keeping up the relationships with everybody. I remember at the time, there's no Facebook, you don't connect in that way. It was like, let's pick up the phone, and it would cost a lot of money to speak to someone in a different country. Anyway, so I didn't know very many people. So I thought, oh, okay, I should start networking. So I started going to some networking events in London, and they were so bad. I hated them all pretty much, and hid in the toilets a lot of the time because I hated the networking. It felt so fake. And networking events are a lot better now, but a lot of the ones then were very, like, it was horrible. And anyway, I was trying to network, didn't really work, but I did meet this one woman in the toilets who was, I think, also hiding out, who worked for a big bank in the city. She was like the profile, like, you're a high-flying woman, you need to come to my event. And she was like, yeah, you know, no problem. And she was nice about it, and she wanted to support me. And then she said, you know, we've got a women's network at our bank. I didn't know anything about women's networks at the time. I was like, oh, what's that? She said, yes, there's thousands of women in this women's network, and I'm going to send out your event to the women's network and see if anybody's interested. And I thought, Okay, that would be great. And the next day, lo and behold, she did actually email me back and say, you know, what are the details, etc. And I sent them to her. And then a couple of weeks passed, and I didn't have the 25 women. Maybe there was like two or three people that had signed up. One was my next door neighbor, one was my sister. And I thought, oh God, this is not going to work at all. I was wrong. I need to, you know, this wasn't for me. So I phoned her up and I said, Melissa, listen, if you haven't sent that out yet, please don't send it out because I don't think this is going to work. And she was like, oh, I sent it out this morning. And I was like, oh no. Like, I was like, I just wanted to run and hide. Anyway, she sent it out and then women must have passed it on to other women, as women do. And long story short, we had 150 signups, 150 nice. Registrations for this first event. And then of course I had to get a bigger room, but it was fabulous because it was a sort of affirmation to me, Sam, you're doing the right thing. There's a need for what you are doing. There's a demand for what you're doing. Women are interested in this. And that was really the start of Aspire, and I never looked back.
Wow. Take that step of faith. Just try it, and things just
boom,
fell into place. That's that lady sounds lovely. You say her name was Melissa.
Yeah, Melissa,
if you're
still out there. You know, I know that's how we operate when we support each other. And I know there's a lot out there about women not supporting women, but there are so many women out there that are supporting women, are supporting everyone, and want to help. Yes. And you know, we have to ask for it though. If I just sort of sat in the toilets with her and said, it's a bit miserable, isn't it? And I'm trying to start my own business and it's not really working. You know, I had to kind of like take a brave pill and say, oh, I've got this event and do you think you might want to come? And I was thinking, she's probably gonna say yes, but not mean it. And when we're on purpose, things fall into place. Mm. And one of my favorite quotes is, be bold and mighty forces will come to your aid. And I love that because it's not like mighty forces are just going to come to your aid for the sake of it. I think mighty forces are looking around and saying, okay, she's doing something. She's taking a risk. She's being braver. She's doing something that's purposeful. Okay, we're going to help her out. And so, but you do have to, and I had to, and I still have to be bold and do things that perhaps are, you know, scary, and there might be consequences or risks involved in them.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you on that. And I'm just imagining the audience as we're speaking now and the kind of things that they would want to ask. And they're probably thinking, Sam, this is great. You know your purpose, but I might know mine, but I don't know how to do it. And I still have, it might be something that maybe I can't make money from. So how am I going to do this? How am I going to, yes, help people, but then how am I also going to support myself and all my and my family? So could you just speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I do really believe that there's a myth out there that purpose equals no money. And you know, as we see the growth of social businesses and you know, B corporations in the US and the growth of businesses that are much more socially conscious, we realize that these two things are really strongly interlinked. You know, I have this vision of the future where there's no such thing as a for-profit and there's no such thing as a charity. You know, these, you know, the two things are completely integrated and they are as one. Because and you know, a lot of people will say, oh, I need to earn the money and then I could do something that I really want to do. And I think, well, gosh, why are you waiting, especially right now? I mean, I don't want to be pessimistic, but the world could come to an end within the next few months, the way things are going. And so you may as well, this is a great time to say what's most important. And it sounds a bit naff to say, and the money will come, because I don't think anyone really wants to hear that. But it does tend to work that way. I mean, I think you need to, as women, we can be a bit... we can overdo it on the pro bono and the free work and all of that kind of thing. And I've always been someone who has, I've done my best to really appreciate money. I've done a lot of work around my limiting beliefs around money. I like money. I think you have to have a good relationship with money. You can ask yourself, you know, if money was your lover, would they stay with you, right? And I think a lot of the time they'd be like, no, I'm getting out of here. You're destructive. You know, you treat me really badly. You have very bad views about me. So I think, you know, we have to kind of take a stock take and have a good relationship with money and do some work on ourselves around money. And then also it needs to be okay to earn money and to earn a good amount of money doing work that's purposeful. I guess if you decide, okay, I'm going to start a not-for-profit or I'm in the charitable world, you know, that's not the goal of a charity to make money. I really like this idea of being a social business or social enterprise, as it's called in the UK, where you say, okay, we want to make money, because the more money we make, the more we can make a difference, the more we can do the things that we really want to do. So, you know, our events, they are a decent price. And some people might say that they're expensive. But I always say, you know, the more money people pay for things, the more they often put value on it. So money has a value to it. Now, at the same time, you know, we have a very active scholarship program, which means that I would never want anyone or any woman who money is a challenge, and money is a challenge for a lot of people right now, to not be able to attend one of our events. So our scholarship program right now, it costs $10, which is just an administration cost, which I'm hopeful that for most people is very accessible, and you can access, you know, a $500, £500 conference for that kind of money. So I do think that you need to kind of think about it and think about how are we going to make money and actually have a plan around that. And I also think that for many women right now that are starting up their own businesses or, you know, doing consulting or coaching or, you know, are in this kind of realm of helping others through personal development and personal health, that this opportunity of doing things more virtual is actually also a great opportunity to bring in money.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was saying to myself, my goodness, you know, I'd much rather have, like, you know, 10,000 women on Zoom paying $10 each than, you know, a lot less women paying a higher price. So we can create that impact. We're also creating enough money so that we can do the things that we want to do, and we can be innovative with our products and with our services. So have a good relationship around money. You know, really think through how you're going to make money. And also, you know, in the short term or maybe even the long term, if you're not making as much money as perhaps you were making in your, you know, your previous job or role, but you're so much happier and you're on purpose and, you know, life is cool, then does it really matter, as long as you're covering the things that you need to cover? You know, when I started Aspire, I didn't have a mortgage. I didn't have three kids. I didn't have a car. I didn't have all these things. And now I do, right? You know, I have all these, budget with my husband. I'm like, you spend $20. Why are you spending $20 right now? So, you know, but I've always kept a very tight rein on my budgets. I learned early on, and I think a lot of women need to learn this lesson. I learned early on the importance of being very, very financially savvy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's absolutely key. And I think we get knocked for that a lot of times. And we don't really understand the finances. And I see a lot of women who their husband does all the finances with a partner. And then if their husband passes away or something like that, they're just like, you know, I don't know how to pay the bills. I'm like, come on, you know, you need to know what a margin is. You need to know how to read a profit and loss account. You need to know how a balance sheet works. It's not, just make yourself do it. It's not my natural thing. I don't love it. Mm. But I do it. I have an Excel sheet for everything.
Yeah. No. Oh gosh, that is so true. Being able to understand finances is so key. And I'm really grateful actually to my mum, who taught me very early on how to manage money. It really makes a difference. It really does. No. Thanks for bringing that up as well. So, ladies, if you're out there, please understand how to use money. Please. Okay, so very, very finally, so we've spoken a lot about a lot of different things today, and I think there's a lot of people can take from this. But if people want to find out more about you, your upcoming events, I know you've got one or two actually, and your book as well, or anything else you're doing, please tell us about that.
Oh, I appreciate that. So my website is aspireforequality.com or .co.uk, depending on where you are in the world. And we have two events coming up, two virtual conferences coming up with some just amazing speakers, and not the kind of speakers you might expect. I call our speakers ordinary, extraordinary women, who are everyday women doing amazing things, very diverse and interesting around the world. We have the Reinvent Conference coming up October 14th and 15th, 2020, and then our Resolve Conference, that really, you know, taking action and putting things into plans and reality, is coming up on the 3rd or 4th of December. So wherever you are, whoever you are, you can access those conferences, and they're on our website. I've also just recently released a second edition of my book, Radio Heaven, One Woman's Journey to Grace, which contains a lot of the stories that you would have heard today and much, much more, with reflective guidance and tips and all sorts of interesting things in there. That's available on Amazon if you're interested in finding out some more about that. You know, come and join us, find out what we're doing. We'd love to have you. And we're focusing on women radically changing the world while still having balance and visibility and peace and fulfillment, which is a big ask, but that's what we're doing. That's what we're up to.
No, I love the vision, and I'll make sure that I put all of this information in the paragraph that goes along with this episode. So any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Well, thank you for letting me do this. And thank you for, you know, I haven't thought about some of those times for a long time, actually. So it's been sort of very cathartic along the way. But I think sometimes we can listen to podcasts, or we can listen to, you know, women talking, and we can say, oh, wow, you know, good for her. That's amazing. But that's not me. Or I couldn't do that. And I really want anybody that's thinking that to stop for a second and you know, take a quiet moment and ask yourself, why not you? Why not you? Because there are so many women who have been really held back of late, you know, the last years. And this is an opportunity to come out of COVID, you know, sort of all guns blazing, despite the fact that, you know, we're seeing so many challenges for women right now. We are finally seeing for the first time examples of women leaders around the world that are taking their countries or their businesses or their organization through COVID extremely successfully. And we are seeing examples of certain male leaders who are not. And, you know, our time is really, really here. So, you know, take a moment, know that it's your time, and know that you don't have to have it all perfectly planned. And if I can do it, seriously, there is nothing special about me. There is nothing about me or any privilege that I had that allowed me to do the things that I'm doing. I sometimes think to myself, if I had some of those things, I wonder what I might be doing. But, you know, I am where I am, and I'm a mum of three, and I, you know, struggle like everyone else. But I think if I can do some of the things I've done, you know, when I look at my friends from school, or even if I look at other family members who are, you know, very different in what they're doing, you know, I live in California, I live in Los Angeles, we have a big house, we have a pool, we have, you know, all these things that if you'd have said to me when I was a kid growing up on this council estate, oh, it's okay, hang in there, because you're going to do, you know, you're going to have all these things, and you're going to have this life, and you're going to be doing this, I would never have believed it. I would never have believed it. And, you know, through those very many dark times that I had. So yeah, good things are coming. I really, really feel that, you know, good things are coming, Crystal. And I really appreciate the work that you're doing and you know, sending this out. So hopefully we can inspire women to great things.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your final thoughts, and thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure.
Okay, take care. Bye. I promised at the start of this episode that I'd be doing a prize giveaway. Sam mentioned that she goes into more depth about how she made her career transition in her book Radio Heaven. So I will be giving away a copy of her book to one of you, because I strongly believe that people can live purposeful lives. So if that's you, here's what you need to do. Really easy. Right now, follow me on Instagram at Vorai Coach. That's spelt V-O-R-A-I Coach. Then share this episode and tag me in it, and then I'll choose the lucky winner. All the best. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Now, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share for more inspiring content.